Welcome, this is Shifting Gears, and you're listening to KDNK. This is William Evans. Our guest today is Ross Douglas. Ross spoke with us last fall about Standing Rock, and he's back again with us today. Welcome, Ross.
Thank you, Will. Thank you for welcoming me to Carbondale.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Water is life.
Ah, yes, water is life.
Are we also all related and interdependent?
Oh, absolutely. We're just part of the web of life. I think an old movie that I remember, Crocodile Dundee, said it pretty eloquently when he was talking about the relationship between the Aborigines and the land. They see themselves as part of the land, and they can't see arguing about who owns what, because they think of it as two fleas arguing about the ownership of the dog that they might be inhabiting. So I thought he was quite humorous with that remark.
Yes. There were interesting events in the South Pacific this last week. The New Zealand Parliament granted personhood, legal standing to the Whanganui River.
Oh, I hadn't heard, Will, yeah. But that is really a step forward. I know that our southern brothers and sisters had been making progress. The Prime Minister of Australia, not too long ago, made an apology to the Aborigines, and they've set aside land in the central part of Australia, making actually quite a bit more of a gesture than their other Western counterparts.
Well, this case in New Zealand went back to 1870, and they granted full legal rights equivalent to that of a person to the river. There will be two guardians from the indigenous Maori community who will speak for the river and represent the water in any court proceedings.
I think that's amazing.
Isn't
yes.
that beautiful?
Yes.
So if you were selected to be the voice of the Missouri River, what would the river say through you?
I think it would say to me what I learned when I went up to Standing Rock, and that sense of sacredness that was attached to the environment and the water, and seeing the connection between the water of ourselves and the water outside and in the world, and our desperate need to protect that resource, which cannot be renewed.
Well, there's definitely an awareness that has been energized by Standing Rock about the relationship we have to the web of life. John Collier, a one-time United States Commissioner of Indian Affairs, says Native Americans have what the world has lost, the reverence and passion for human personality, for the earth, and for the web of life.
Yes, that is a fundamental tenet that I've heard echoed over and over and over again. For me in particular, a man named Vine Deloria Jr., a Lakota man who was a professor at the University of Colorado, spoke eloquently on that subject. And he said, we are not going to be able to affect a change until we make this spiritual change towards giving reverence to all that is.
And all my relations means my big family, including the rivers and the plants and trees and
even the rocks,
creatures,
Will.
Mother Earth, we're all in kinship.
Yes, that's so true. And I think the natives have given us a sense that Gaia principle, that everything's alive. I know as a skier going up in the mountains and watching the snow as it deforms, it acts as a living being. As the sun hits it, it changes its external molecular structure so that it can survive longer. So in all these little things, we see elements of life.
So where I'm trained to see state lines and fences and walls, Indigenous people are looking at their family and relatives.
Yes, yes. And even the rock people, or the silent nation, the plants and so forth. And they're all connected in a web as brothers and sisters. And that's why the Lakotas say, all my relations.
Yes. I heard a wonderful story about Orrin Lyons of the Onondaga Nation. He was the first of his tribe to go to college. And when he came home for the first break, he had an encounter with his uncle that he said changed his life. And his uncle took him out into a lake fishing. And in the middle of the lake, he said to him, "Well, now, Orrin, you've been to college. You must be pretty smart now. Let me ask you a question. Who are you?" And Orrin was stunned. He asked his uncle, "What do you mean? I'm your nephew." And his uncle was not satisfied. He simply repeated the question. He said, "Who are you?" And Orrin said, "You know, I'm Orrin Lyons." "No." And Orrin tried again. He said, "I'm a human being." "No." He tried again and again. And finally, Orrin exhausted all the answers he could think of. And he said, "I guess I don't know who I am. Tell me, uncle." And his uncle said, "Orrin, you see that bluff over there? You're that bluff. And you see that pine tree over here? You're that pine tree. And do you see the water that the boat is floating on? You are the water. You are not separate. You are the water under the canoe."
Beautiful sentiment. I have listened to Orrin many, many times. He's the faith keeper for that tribe and did represent all of the natives from around the world, really, when he went to the UN in 1977 in Geneva. So an amazing person. I highly recommend that people look him up on the internet and see what he has to say.
From my own tradition, I grew up learning the 23rd Psalm. And as I grow older, my appreciation for the beauty of the still waters and the truth of the water within me and around me just continues to grow.
Yes, but I think a part of that has been your experience with the South Sea Islanders, and that experience, that is probably, as far as I can see, a pivotal thing.
I'm a total accumulation of all the water I've been with. So children love to play in water.
Yes, yes. No, we feel a sense of harmony and a sense of brotherhood, I think, with it.
And joy.
Yes.
And then I entered the world of contest behavior in school and commerce, and for a long time that seemed to dominate me.
Well, it's very enticing. You feel joyous when you compete and win. I mean, there's a few things that are equivalent to the exhilaration of winning. We just had the World Cup in Aspen, and you could see the exhilaration within the competitors. So it's a very strong and useful and natural human experience.
And we're in a watershed moment. The economic and political experiment of attempting to organize human behavior around the global marketplace are failing. And the life-sustaining capacity of Mother Nature is no longer able to absorb all the heat of human foolishness. Species are dying off, and we're into a time of extinction.
Yes, that is true, but it is also a time of great possibility, and we've got to seize the day, as I might quote from the Romans.
Well, we certainly know Mother Nature administers her laws with no favoritism for her human children.
Oh, that's definitely true, and that's why I said we have to get in there, see what the problems are, and face them. We can't continue to ignore the realities of our situation, whether it be the finite things with the planet or the man-made things of laws and the framework that we live in.
So unless there's a massive heart-mind change of direction, America's going to continue in the direction we're going.
Well, we seem to have accelerated our destruction of the natural world in these last few months. But I think what it will produce is a kind of a crisis moment and I'm hopeful that we'll have a kind of a catharsis and an understanding in a more widespread way, generally with the society.
I told a woman today that as I observe from my perspective the events and leadership in Washington, I feel a need more strongly to develop my own voice and skills and rely more on local leadership than what I'm witnessing on a national level.
Yes, that's kind of what I meant. I mean, it is bringing a gravitas to the situation, and it's motivating people. And obviously, you've been motivated.
Well, it's a real paradox. A woman yesterday, and she said to me she just couldn't understand why we Americans keep inflicting this violence on Native Americans.
Well, it's a difficult habit to break. For a very long time, people have seen aggression and war as a vehicle to achieve a prosperity. And we're going to have to break through to the other side and get to a world that's more just. And with justice brings peace.
How did we get in this situation?
Well, I guess what we're leading into is our legal structure, our framework that defines how we're all going to fit together in terms of the Native Americans and the Western world as we know it. Back in the 1500s, we call that the Age of Conquest, we set in motion a framework that disenfranchised the Native cultures around the world and gave legal preeminence to the Christian nations. Because at that time, in the 14, 1500s, there was no Europe. Europe did not exist. Italy was not a country until 1850. They were individual countries, and they were, in the case of, say, France, were a Catholic country. In the case of Italy, a Catholic country again. In the case of England at that time, Henry VII was Catholic, and then by the time we get later on to, like, Elizabeth, when we were actually colonizing the Eastern Seaboard, that was the Anglican Church. And the legal structure gave a preeminence to the Christian nations and withdrew the rights of indigenous people. And that process has kind of continued today. Now, it did fluctuate over time in the time period that when we were forming the country in 1776. A lot of the colonies and so forth were buying land from the Indians. We used a process we call English common law, where the occupant has, as people have often used the term, occupancy is 99% of the law, so that if you occupied the land, it gave you more of a title. Well, it gave you more rights in terms of a title dispute if you were actually occupying the land. And in 1823, there was a court case decided that turned that English common law on its head, and we reverted back to the Age of Conquest and gave basically the Christians more land rights than natives. And natives ended
up with... So is there a document you're talking about that has a name and
yes,
we know who wrote it?
Yes, yes. There are several documents. They start out really with the Portuguese documents that were given by the Pope to the Portuguese. Prince Henry the Navigator had been sailing along the coast of Africa, and he got the Pope or not he, but the Pope granted land rights to Christian explorers that were exploring the coast of Africa. Subsequent to that, Christopher Columbus sailed across the ocean, and when he came back in 1493, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella went to the Pope and asked for an additional papal bull, a papal document that would give them land rights to the lands that they found. And
so the picture I see of Columbus or someone else standing on the beach with the flag of Spain or Portugal.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about. They stepped onto that land.
Yes, there actually was a religious rite that people did at the time. Say the land that we now occupy was claimed I think it was 1540 in the Coronado expedition. A man named Diaz, who was part of Coronado's expedition, crossed the Colorado River. And as he crossed the river, he would do this liturgical rite and claim the land that water touched. So since we're on the watershed for the Colorado, Aspen became part of Spain's claim right there in 1540. And they maintained it. And then when we got the documents from the Spanish-American War, that would have been those documents from the Coronado expedition.
And this document is called the
Christian Doctrine of Discovery, and it really is not just one document. It's a whole series of documents. And the Supreme Court justice in 1823 codified all these documents into one policy, and it's become known as the Doctrine of Discovery or the Discovery Doctrine or the Christian Doctrine of Discovery. But it only applies to Christians. And from that, that's where we get this Manifest Destiny. A few years after that, published in a paper, I believe down in Texas, a man coined that Manifest Destiny term. But that's what he was referring to, these documents where we claimed the land.
So freedom of religion in America really means Christian empire supersedes indigenous nature-based alliances and kinships.
Absolutely, and that has not only happening here in the United States, but it happens worldwide. And most countries hearken back to the United States law, like the New Zealand and Australia both make reference to Johnson v. McIntosh and the framework that we set up to control the indigenous people.
This is William Evans. We're shifting gears, and I'm speaking with Ross Douglas about the Doctrine of Discovery. So federal Indian law adopted this stance of domination, even though it's a pretension.
Yes, and they even mention in the law that it is a pretension. They're pretending that this claiming of the land that we were talking about is a legal right. And it's mentioned in the documents that it is, in fact, a pretension. They're pretending that these claims have significance.
Wow. You know, it's important for me to stand in my authentic identity, but I want to know the truth, but sometimes it's painful to hear these things. I knew about the Crusades and the Inquisitions and the molestation of children, but this is just a whole new chapter I have to digest and assimilate and make peace with.
Yes. You know, it's difficult. And even earlier in my life, I shied away from even thinking about it. But we're now at a time when the natural world is just being destroyed. And I felt it was necessary to start learning about this and to start speaking up. And I think it's gaining momentum. In 2009, the American Episcopal Church came out with a denunciation and a declaration against these documents. And in 2010, I think it was the Quakers who did the same thing. And in 2011, the Unitarians and the,
wow,
the World Council of Churches. And as people are going through this, they're understanding that this is something that we need to talk about. And then maybe in my daughter's generation, we can actually make movement on it. Now, we have made some movement with the document from the UN called the Rights of Indigenous People, the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, but it still is a difficult uphill road even to get some basic movement and basic rights, because the Christian Doctrine of Discovery is what a corporation would use as it went into, say, an island like Hawaii. You would use that to strip land away from Aboriginal people and turn it into corporate profits. And so this is the feeder that feeds basic usurpation of the natural world, because most of the protected natural world is protected by the indigenous people.
Yeah, they protect it, and we
exploit it.
Exploit it. Yeah, I know. Orville Looking Horse says, Mother Earth is a source of life, not a resource.
Yes, somehow in our philosophy, we have turned the natural world into a commodity. And it keeps getting more and more severe as we go. And now we're affecting the water. And the natives up in Standing Rock said that this enough was enough, and they took a stand. And it was heartening to me to hear people over in Africa and over in Europe talk about Standing Rock. They know what the reality of that process is, and I think it will remain a focal point, a rallying cry, much the same as Remember Pearl Harbor.
So I either trust myself and my kinship with life and go in that direction, or I continue in this stampede of life-taking commerce and genocide.
Yes, but first we have to recognize it and understand it. And so much of our educational system is set up to kind of undermine that. As we see now in the political spectrum, we hear these terms fake news. So all information is kind of being discredited in this process. And what we have to get down to is what you've realized. What is truth? I'm standing in this river. What is water? What is truth?
Well, that's why I just keep saying to myself, water is life, because it resonates with truth in me.
Yes.
And I can feel it, and the truth is nourishing.
Yes.
Lies and deceit and alternative facts, they don't come into me with nourishment.
Well, they're not meant to nourish. They're meant to confuse and actually perpetrate a fraud of some kind. Fraud is based on deception.
Well, I noticed the Yakima Nation has joined the Lakota Nation in petitioning Pope Francis to retract the Doctrine of Discovery.
Yes, I saw that the other day in Washington. It was very heartening. I called my father up and said, "See, Dad, everybody's coming along. Everybody's starting to understand this. And now we've got all these multitude of church groups, the World Council of Churches. The people that we have to get on board next are the Catholic Church in general and the Anglican Church in England. Those are two biggies. And I think a third biggie, and it's going to be probably an enormous thing in the United States, are the Southern Baptists in this country. That will be a very difficult group to convince that we need to be more Christian.
All denominations are able to see and hear the sounds and feel the temperatures of Mother Earth. And
yes.
She speaks a universal language that's understood by Southern Baptists, Catholics, and Anglicans.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But, we can only speak so far, and it just takes a while to get through and speak with love and compassion to people, and hopefully we can get through this.
Amen. Thank you, Ross.
You're welcome, Will.
This is KDNK. You've been listening to Ross Douglas explain some of the significance of the doctrine of discovery. Thank you for listening.